Frank's guest is Paul Gotlick. And you were just asking Paul where he just came back from. Would you say it again, please?
Okay. Yeah. I just came back from Eastern Europe, where I visited some relatives, and I went to a wedding in Krakow. Good, strong Polish wedding. Lots of vodka. I didn't drink that much myself. Can't handle it.
We, Jay, just, G, O, go, we just got a vodka. We buy Russian vodka to make tinctures, herbal tinctures, but you need, because of GMOs, I like to get stuff that's made outside of the U.S. at this point, even though I know, you could tell us more about this. Which vodka should we buy? There's an organic vodka that I used to get, but it's only 70 proof, I think, and I need 100 proof.
I am not an expert on vodka. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but potatoes, that's what they make them from?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, potatoes, there were some potatoes made new leaf. They were called new leaf potatoes. They were genetically engineered potatoes. And I think they've been taken off the market because they just didn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
Probably and because people knew.
That was in the United States?
Yeah.
Does B U B Y B U buying from E Europe I N
ensure
that it's not GMO ingredients?
Well, I mean, you had Ignacio Chappella on here, and you know that even though it's illegal to grow the stuff down in Mexico, the corn is totally contaminated. And the corn here probably is. In Europe, they have lots of test sites all over the place. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's inevitable that everything will be. It's inevitable. You can't stop it. Yeah, it's life. You know, you let life out of the bottle, and it likes to multiply.
They R G R O growing G GMO crops. We found out at the Marin in San Pablo, that little patch there.
Yeah, that's the garden.
Yes.
They're taking that just done.
Pardon?
Is that the one that was part of the university?
Yes, but we found out that they have been growing GMO stuff there, even there.
Wow, I didn't know that.
UC, yeah.
Yeah, UC.
Yeah, part of UC. It's like a test kind of thing, growing GMO stuff.
Well, they're all over the place.
Stuff.
I mean, they're just everywhere. Yeah, and you know, another friend of mine is a Percy Schmeiser. I know you know him.
Yeah.
Now here's a guy.
P L E A. Please get all of your friends on my show.
Oh, really? Okay. I'll remember that. Yeah. Devinder Sharma might be coming around September or November again.
Cool.
He speaks about the effects of globalization and genetic engineering on developing countries like his own India.
Yes.
And with him, there's other people involved too, but we produced, there's a video that's been made of Percy. He spoke at the University of Texas, Austin in 2001, and it's called Heartbreak in the Heartland. You can still get a copy of that. I think I gave it to you.
We played that on
Lover. Yeah, okay.
We played
so you have that, but I got it translated into, you ready?
Yes.
Into several languages, like French, Spanish, Chinese, and Hindi. Devinder got the Hindi done, and we made a Hindi dub of the video to hand out to farmers, and that's just going out this week in India. So,
nice.
And the message really is, if you deal with Monsanto or your neighbor deals with Monsanto, the same thing will happen to you.
We are F-O-F-I.
Glad the next one wasn't you.
N, finding that F-O-O, food, C-O, companies, have to S-I, sign that they will, that they will not give out the names of their suppliers.
Well, the whole thing is just riddled with stuff like that. I don't know that myself. You know, I mean, but the whole thing is just riddled. The whole system is riddled with that kind of behavior. It doesn't surprise me. You know, because if you call with pesticides, for instance. If you're dying from pesticide exposure, and you call the EPA and you say, "I want to know what's in this pesticide," they can't tell you. I mean, doctors can have that information. I'm not sure about that, but if you just call the EPA and say, "I want to know what's in this," I mean, I'm a consumer. I'm using this. They by law they can't even tell you, right? And it's proprietary information. It's secret. The whole thing is all one big secret. Well,
B E C, because we G O got B, we got B and G. You're probably very familiar with the GMO project at Berkeley Natural Grocery.
Oh yeah,
Corey and a couple of other people.
Yeah.
We actually were the ones responsible for getting that going.
Good, good.
We sent them letters, and we were actually ready. We had already printed out the flyers about that we were going to stand outside with something that said. Something, do you think a natural grocery store should carry genetically modified food? You know, tell the owners that you don't want them to carry it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were ready to go, and we had sent them letters too, and they decided to go with this GMO project, which, I mean, you know, from the beginning, they've only done just enough to kind of pacify. They won't kind of go that next step, like labeling things or taking things off the shelf or things like that.
No, heavens, if they label it, it's all over.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as the sales of the stuff,
right,
you can't stop it from growing. But
right. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that project. And who's the not the owner, but...
The manager?
The manager.
Rick is the manager.
Rick, and then...
Bob is the owner.
Bob, yeah.
Yeah.
When Percy came to stay with me, I had Bob come, and he had dinner with Percy and me.
Yeah.
So it was nice. It was interesting really getting a chance to talk to him, because he's never at that store.
Right, yeah. But it is A.M. Amazing. The response. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I know. Corey tells me about it.
Yeah.
I shop there once a week at least.
So we've got loads and loads and loads of companies, of natural grocery stores all over the country and Canada that signed on. And then for those who don't know, and then they put together a letter that they send out to the companies that make the products, with all these signatures, all these companies saying that they want to know what's in the stuff and they want verification that it doesn't contain genetically modified ingredients. And it's really impressive.
Well, yeah, it is. I think it's a really great project, and I hope it keeps moving along with great speed. The thing is, though, that most foods will be contaminated with it, even the organic. I mean, wherever they look for it these days, it seems they find it.
How? L? How long?
How long before it's all contaminated? I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, if you look at the case of Oaxaca, I mean, how long had they been receiving our genetically engineered corn? I don't know. I'm not an expert on that, but there hasn't been genetically engineered corn all that long. So, there's a corn is very prolific, though. You know, the seeds can travel great distances. Mm-hmm. Canola is too. Canola can. I mean, Percy says that stuff can go 20, 30 miles, maybe 40. I don't know. Mm. So, I mean, it's our lifetime. It's our lifetime. Mm. But that's, I can't think too much about that.
How? Does P. Percy think of the C. O. O. You court decision?
Well, I think he had an inkling of what was coming down there, but it was more important for him to press on with the case. I think he knew it was vital. I mean, what he's doing is bringing it some visibility to a greater number of people, and that's exactly what he did. And that was a very mixed decision.
Maybe you should like say what it is for people who don't.
Well,
know.
Well, Percy Schmeiser is a Canadian canola farmer, Saskatchewan. I forgot how long he's been a farmer, but he's 73 years old now. And he's been a farmer most of his life, probably 50 years. And he's developed his own canola seed over the decades. And he never bought, never planted genetically engineered canola. And one day he came out and noticed that around the utility poles, he sprayed with Roundup. It's a general all-purpose pesticide he was using. And Roundup is designed, well, plants like corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are being genetically engineered to be resistant to Roundup. And the active ingredient in Roundup is glyphosate, and there's a lot of other things in it that make it really terrible. But he was spraying this stuff around the utility poles to kill off the weeds, and noticed that there was some canola around the utility poles that weren't dying, canola plants, and he knew what it was, and then he tried to test one whole field, I think he did, and found that 40 or 60% of it
of lived, his field
of his own field 60 40 to 60% of his own field lived through it. And that, I think not long after that, he got a letter in the mail, which he calls an extortion letter, and I would too, that said, you pay us this amount of money, and it was a sizable sum of money. And for him, the money was an issue, of course, but more of an issue to him was farmers' rights, and he had been the mayor of his city, and he also had been a member of parliament, and he stuck up for farmers' rights. He said he always stuck up for farmers' rights all the time.
And they wanted him to pay money because...
Because they found... Well, yeah, I'm sorry. They found the genetically engineered canola, which was Monsanto's, of course. They found that his crops contained, the seeds contained the genes of that canola. And they sued him. Actually, what they did was they sent him that extortion letter, and he refused to pay them. So then they sued him. And he lost...
Sense.
There is no common sense in it.
He should, would be the one to sue them. In our world of common sense, he would be the one to sue them for contaminating his seed that he has spent decades creating, modifying. Yeah.
Exactly. It's the other way around, though, in this world of corporate empire. What we have is the victim is now the guilty party. That's what this has done with Percy.
Yes.
So they found him guilty. They found him guilty in court, federal court. He appealed it in federal court. He lost that. And then we just had the Supreme Court of Canada.
Of what?
They found him guilty of
guilty
what?
Guilty of what?
The federal court case started off where they said they made all kinds of accusations, like he stole the seeds, he got them illegally, you know, all this kind of, then they dropped all of that, and it became just an issue of, it was there. And what came out of that, the federal courts, was, it doesn't matter how it got there. It could come by bird, by bee, off the side of a truck, and all of these things most likely happened. And he even showed, they had witnesses that came in and said, oh, a whole bag of seed fell off of my truck going by your property. It didn't matter. It didn't matter how it got there. The point was, he was guilty. And what they really said was, you knew or should have known that those seeds were contaminated and you should not have used them the next year. Now, you know, this is, and I, Percy said to me, he said, this is my farm. They're telling me I can't use my seeds. They contaminated my farm and I can't use my own seeds. So that's really it in a nutshell. It's sort of a mixed decision on what happened in the Supreme Court decision, too.
And what was that?
Well, they did find him guilty of infringement, patent infringement. There were no monetary damages, so he didn't have to pay anything. It was not a big win for Monsanto, and it was not a big loss for Percy. Mm. So, but Monsanto did not win this.
So does that mean that he can't continue growing?
I mean, if he were to use his seed over again, then I mean he'd be in direct violation. And even worse than that is that the seed that he developed over the years, he had to give all of his canola seed to Monsanto. So what they did was they've analyzed it, and they sell a seed with the same kind of genetic makeup as Percy's seed that he developed over decades. And he can't, they've patented it too. Now he can't even use his own seed that he developed. Right?
Wow.
Yeah, that's true.
One. Would. 1, 9. 8. 1984.
Oh.
Was.
Yeah.
T. A. Tame compared to the reality now.
that the things I'm seeing. I mean, I pay attention to many technologies, not just genetic engineering, and we're seeing a lot of development of they're trying to have mind control, you know, through chemicals, electronics. I just saw a little picture of a mouse that had some kind of a thing strapped to it. But I mean, miniaturization is facilitating, you know, this kind of stuff. It'll make it more and more possible. Right now, they can't really track somebody. I mean, with a chip. I mean, Somebody's been telling me that they can do this, but I really haven't seen that in any literature. Yeah, but the other way around, they have got microwave antennas all over the place. I mean, we are being bombarded with microwaves of all sorts 24 hours a day. I mean, there's satellites spinning around in space, and I mean, you look up in the hills and you see all the microwave towers. You have a cell phone. If your cell phone is on, they can track you anywhere you are, right? I mean, that's that technology, the GPS stuff. And everybody wants the cell phone. Everybody wants a cell phone. Everybody wants to be, you know, you see them driving in their cars. And it bothers me a lot. It just, I met with a man in Dresden. He's from Berlin. And when I was in Europe, and he has a theory about water and how it's affected by microwaves. And you know, our bodies are made up of a good percentage of water, and most of it. So, and while I was there, I saw microwave towers everywhere, more than here, because especially in Eastern Europe, they don't have the lines, the cables in the ground. It's cheaper for the phone companies to put up these towers. And it's also cheaper for the people to have the cell phones than to have a hard line. In fact, I couldn't find a cousin of mine in Prague because he no longer has a hard line phone. And he's not listed in the phone book. And I didn't bring his address with me like a...
So people with cell phones, the cell phone numbers aren't in phone books.
Right? I don't know. No. Huh.
Never thought of that aspect of it. I never thought of that aspect of it, that you can't look somebody up in the phone book.
Well, then there's other things. That, you know, radio frequency ID tags. They're Walmart and larger stores. Walmart is having a lot of their products... have what's called radio frequency ID tags in them, and that's not long distance transmission. But when you go through a doorway that has the pickups, you know, like they have they detect whether you have you know, you're stealing something, right? They have little things like the library has them, and so they have these other things now that they put in them that give information on where a product came from. That kind of thing, where it was produced. So they're gathering all this kind of information all the time. It may be in your clothing. I mean, I don't buy stuff from Costco. And I think I'm just about ready to start buying from the Salvation Army all the time.
That's where we buy from. I figure for that, if no other reason. All this stuff.
I know. And what do you do about the food? And what do you do about all this
stuff? I heard also that in plates and cooking utensils, there's depleted uranium.
Well, the industry that does all this metals recycling, I mean, they're just dying to put this stuff somewhere. And there's a load of it to put somewhere, too.
Have they started doing it?
I read an article by Janice Junsrud in, I think, 1996 or 7. Talking about this, I haven't kept up with it, but yeah. I mean, you know, they're putting. Why not?
Right.
When you think about what they do to our food, what they do to our medicine, what they do.
FERTI. Fertilizer.
Oh, fertilizer. Who? I mean, like in a package, Frank?
Fertilizer that you put on your garden stuff? Is that what you mean? Yeah. Oh, that N, nuclear waste?
Ooh.
He had heard that.
Well, the fertilizer can be radioactive. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're, say, especially, so if you go out to the farms, yeah, they found sewage sludge. I mean, sewage sludge, they're putting, I lived in Indiana for a while, and they have enormous hog farms with thousands of hogs, and they have open cesspools that are, say, 6-8 feet deep and the size of a football field. And sometimes the sides break, and this stuff just goes flowing. It's the urine and feces, and it just mixed, and it goes flowing out over the fields and into streams, and hundreds of thousands of fish can get killed. And the smell from it is so bad that up to a mile away it can kill trees. And then the government comes back and says, this is okay. No problem. But when I went to the meetings, it was in Indianapolis. I'd go to these meetings about the regulation of hog farms, and the industry was always present. Always present. And they got the guy from the industry group, the Pork Producers Association, got more, he had more clout than anybody else. I mean,
where do you think the T-E-R term P-O pork B
barrel
pork
barrel.
Belly
pork
barrel.
Barrel
pork barrel,
yeah,
came from?
From Indiana?
How did you get involved? No, get P-A-R-A paranoid? How did you get paranoid?
How did I get paranoid? Well, can we first define paranoid? Okay, you know, paranoid, I think, is a necessary thing to have in life, as long as it doesn't become a paranoia of something that doesn't exist. When there's something that you know exists, and it is ubiquitous, not only in society, but in your food, in the air, in the water. You know, it's paranoia, but that's a funny word to use in this, you know, this society, because immediately they say, you're a nut. If you're paranoid, you're a nut. Okay, well, I became paranoid, if you want to call it that. I became paranoid, I think, in about 1991 or 2. I stayed at home when my son was born, and I was the parent, the stay-at-home parent, and I had a chance to start thinking for once in my life, start thinking what I wanted to think, not what the boss wanted to think, you know, not what the corporation wanted me to think. And I had a lot of questions.
What?
Yeah.
Did you do before that?
I was an architect. I still have my license, and you know, don't hold it against me. I don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But my last project before I did that, I'm almost ashamed to say it, but I have to preface it. I was on unemployment. I had a two-family house in New Haven, Connecticut. that I was renovating by myself, completely gutted, and I lost my job, and the woman I was with left me. You know, things weren't looking good, in other words. I had melanoma, and I had an operation. It was a pretty severe operation. I got over it. There were a lot of things that were really bad. And I recovered from this stuff, and then I started going to unemployment office, and I found a job one day listed, and I couldn't believe the amount of money that it said it would pay. Now, this is, you know, some 15 years ago. I multiplied out the hourly scale, and it came to $60,000 a year 15 years ago. And the only thing was, it was as a consultant to the state of Connecticut, designing and overseeing the construction of prisons. At that point in time, I hadn't had a political thought in my mind. I mean, really, I never had a chance to think much. That's no excuse, but I stayed with that about a year, and then there was no sense in it whatsoever. I mean, even if you believed that prisons are a good thing, I have to say, I don't. Not at all. There should be no prisons. So even if you believe that there should be prisons, even if you believe that people should be there, the way they were carrying on the business had nothing to do with anything. I mean, it wasn't long before I saw shoes. I mean, you look at shoes sometimes, probably $500 shoes, $2,000 suits, lobbyists coming through this office. I'm thinking, what is the matter here? Why are lobbyists coming through here? And one job that I had, I was in charge of looking over several. One of them was done by one of the largest architects in the state, and he had the most dollar amount of work for designing these prisons. Did the worst work. And I would go to job meetings, and I get no answer from anybody, and it was ridiculous. They'd give me the drawings with a stack of paper like this, you know, big sheets, nothing on them. The labels are there. It says side view, plan of this, like cross-section of that with numbers, a couple little lines drawn, and nothing there. And I'd take my red pencil, and I would just put a big X in it and, you know, say, come back and give me some work. I got scolded for that. And I was told, you have to tell them what they did wrong. I can't tell them what they did wrong. They didn't do anything. Right? Well, I came to find out that they weren't even doing the work. It was subbed out to a firm in Peoria, Illinois, who never even came to the job meetings.
Wow.
And I don't know if they even had the codes. Right?
Wow.
So this was not, I started to see, this is not about building prisons. I mean, I at that point in time, I could build anything. And I was giving them advice, and they weren't taking it. In fact, they were telling me to be quiet. I could have saved them millions of dollars. But, you know, it was not about saving the taxpayers' money. It was not about safety. It was not about, you know, holding prisoners. It was about keeping the construction business going. It was about, you know, building up this prison industrial complex. You know, and I really didn't see that until probably not that long ago, maybe 10 years, maybe less. You know, and I've heard Angela Davis and many other people speak, and you know, as a result of that, I help out there's a group in Berkeley, commemoration committee for the Black Panther Party. Yeah, good group, and they have a good newspaper too, the Commemorator. Anybody wants to donate money, give it to them.
Or to lover.
Yeah, of course.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
It's a really diverse background, and the stuff that I've looked at is I can't stay in any one place for very long. You know, I mean, my mind is just wandering all over the place, and every technology that I look at is just riddled with problems, and it makes none of them make any sense. You know, we talk about science. There's no science in science.
E. X. Except for P. Profit.
Right, right. That's the creativeness in science is profit. Mm. There is an unending creativeness in profit. Mm. That's it. Everything else is, I don't know. They really...
It has S-T-O stopped R-E research, no, R-E-A. L, real, E, V, O,
revolution.
Evolution. It has stopped real evolution.
It has stopped real evolution. Well, that's debatable, I think, because, you know, evolution doesn't stop. What we've done is we've, well, I see real, meaning, yeah, no, I see what you mean. Yeah,
R,
it has, yeah.
E. Real, P, R, O, C, E, process, P, R, O, progression, P, R, O, G, R, P, R, O, G, R, no, P, R, O, G, E, S, S,
progress.
It has stopped real progress.
What is real progress? Am I supposed to answer questions or just ask? I mean, can I ask?
Yeah, you can ask.
Okay, yeah, what is progress?
S, O, L, solving? P.
Problems.
Problems.
Yeah, solving problems.
E. Mm. X. P. L. Exploring.
Exploring.
The mind. Solving problems, exploring the mind. S. M. A. K. I, smacking, making things be better.
Better. Mm. Better than, I say better than what? I don't want any of this stuff. I don't want it. I don't want it. I mean, I'm afraid that in order to sustain the number of people that we have on this earth right now, we may need it. But then again, I'm not so sure. We keep increasing the amount of technology that we have, and yet more and more people are starving to death. More and more people are living in poverty and misery, and it's not helping. The only people it's helping is those who own the companies at the top.
Where?